everyone out there in Lasso Land. This is Peanut Butter and Biscuits, your Ted Lasso fan cast for NPR Illinois Community Voices and for the Front Row Network. I'm your host today, Craig, and I'm joined by my wonderful co-host, Mr. Jeremy Geffner.
One of these days, it's just going to be someone else, and then they're going to be like, what?
I know you got to do an episode with Courtney early this season because I was gone. And then didn't I do one without you? I feel like maybe I did at some point.
I feel like maybe Brandon or something. I don't know. It's there. Like you and your best friend Luke Tenney can do it sometime. So
Luke Tenney, you can come back anytime you want. You know anytime who else want, could man. Come back anytime they want? Mr. James Lance.
Mr. James Lance.
Plays Trent Krim on our wonderful show, Ted Lasso, here. And it is this conversation. I love it. I loved this conversation. I'm so glad that we get to share this with you as an audience, because it's one of those that we all love his character of Trent Krim. You're going to fall in love with him as an actor and the amount of research and respect that he puts into his role. But also we get to have a little bit of fun with him too.
Yeah, we get to have a lot of fun with him. Throw him some curveball questions. But you're right. Like, that's just the key thing to take away from this, guy is just like, as much as you love Trent Krim, you're about to love James Lance just as much. Just an absolutely awesome human being, and so introspective, so fantastic in the way he thinks about the character and just life in general. So I cannot wait for you guys to hear this.
In fact, I think we should just kind of dive right into it, shouldn't we?
We need to push that play button.
Man. We already did all of our housekeeping and all that in our normal episode. So without further ado, here is Mr. James Lance, Trent Krim himself. It is such an honor to welcome to Peanut Butter and Biscuits, Mr. James Lance, Trent Krim himself. So I hope you're having a good day.
I'm having a really nice day. It's the end of the day here in the UK, but it's been a good one. Yeah, hi. Good to be here.
Yeah, that's excellent. So I get the honor of asking our first question to you, and that question we've asked of a lot of your different castmates that we've gotten a chance to speak to, and that's your superhero origin story. You know, we know you now as Trent Krim, and we on this show that we love, but I'm wondering how you make the transition from being a stage actor into being on our screens in Ted Lasso.
Well, I mean, I've been an actor for a very long time. I was a child actor. I grew up in the countryside in Somerset in the UK, and the BBC did a movie in the village just next to the one I lived in. And I auditioned, and after a couple of recalls, they gave me the role. I was 10 years old, and it was just the most exciting experience of my young life. You know, I loved it. I knew I wanted to be an actor before then, but getting on set and being kind of, everyone was so delightful to me. You know, they were so nice to me, and I just fell in love with movie making So then I met these beings that were called theater school kids. I was like, what is that? Yeah, and it turned out that they were these little people that could go to a school where half the time they could do dancing and singing and acting and basically mucking about. And I thought, I think I want to go there. So after 2 years of flunking out at school, I am persuading my mum to let me go to London. I moved to London at the age of 12 years old with my like a little Dick Whittington with tap shoes, and lived in East End of London. And I went to theatre school in London. And I used to go home to see my mum at the weekends, and started working professionally as an actor, and just carried on. And I'm now at the tender age of, what am I? I'm 48 now. So I've had a No, I'm not. That's not true. Or am I? Hold on, wait. What am I? 40? I can't remember if I'm 49 or 48. No, I'm 48. Yeah, I'm 48. So I've had a 38 year career.
That's incredible. And you know, it's great because Jeremy and I actually met through doing some theater, and it's just one of those things. Theater people, it's something special about being able to see that audience and be able to experience that feeling of going on stage and just kind of bearing your emotions, but also it's not really your emotions. It's another character that you're able to embody. It's just, there's something so special about it.
Yeah, it is. I can't imagine doing any other job. And so far I've become more and more kind of enchanted with acting, funnily enough. I mean, I've had very, you know, bare periods where, no work has been coming in, and I thought, oh God, what am I going to do? But luckily it keeps coming. But the actual sort of art history of it, I'm more in love with it than I ever have been, actually. I love being an actor.
Yeah, I totally echo Craig there. There's nothing quite like theater. And you have so many of your fellow castmates who actually do come from the West End and have theater backgrounds and stuff. And I really feel like it shows. Of course, I always remember Hannah on the Emmys when she won, talking about give theater people a chance. Like, we will, you know, yeah, make you look good and stuff. And that's always been our credo too. We always want to champion that. But I find it really comes out in the show, and like all the physical nods and facial expressions that you guys get, really get a lot of opportunities to show those off. Tell me, how did you go about like developing the persona of Trent Crim? Like, when you first got the job on Ted Lasso, like, what was your process to kind of make this guy come to life?
Well, it all starts from the name, Trent Crim. You know, if that doesn't make you smile, I don't know what will. I read the name and I thought, first of all, what a brilliant name. You know, this is like a Dickensian character. But the question came up, who is Trent Crim? And his voice kind of, I heard his voice, and it wasn't quite like mine. Mine's a lot lighter. I knew that he had to be down in his balls, you know what I mean? So I was much more sort of Trent Crim, the Independent, uh-huh. down there. And suddenly that kind of riff of saying Trent Crim, the Independent. it just sounded humorous and obviously ridiculously pompous and self-important and, you know, elevated and high status, that that was the sort of the exterior or the highfalutin persona. But I knew that inside there was a little Trent Crim. You know, Trent Crim is not, not the name, I've said this before, but it's not the name of a bully. There's a, you know, if you think of a little boy called Trent Crim, it's quite a different kind of character. So there was a sort of an immediate kind of bookend feel there. There was this like the little boy, and then there was who he had become in that press conference. And I knew that I had this idea that he had a tough dad, which is, I didn't know this, but this was a theme in the show. As you guys will know by now, but when I did episode one, season one, I had no idea this was a theme of the show. I didn't know what episode two was going to be. I didn't even know if Trent Crim was going to be in episode two. But I was talking to Jason, and he liked what I did in the press room, and he said, "Great to have you on." And I said, "You know, I think the reason Trent's the way he is because he's got a bit of a tough dad." And he was like, "Hey, man. Like, I'm going to tell you something that people don't know." He was like, "This whole show is about bad dads." I was like, "Really?" And he told me the story of Ted's father and what had happened, and, you know, how that had kind of informed Ted being, you know, seizing the day and life and being positive. And I was like, "Yeah, I don't think Trent's kind of living the life he wants, you know. I think he's kind of bored as a sports journalist. I think there's more in there." That sort of, it kind of evolved quite quickly out of that. And also just, I knew that the glasses and the sort of the voice was his shield, was his sword and his shield, you know, that was his armor. I knew that he hadn't been picked on the school football team. He wasn't, in my mind, he wasn't who his father wanted him to be. And actually, I always thought his dad would have liked him to be like a Roy Kent. You know, if he'd been a Roy Kent, like a man's man and all that kind of thing, things would have been a little smoother for Trent. So he had to wander off to the library and become something other. So that gives you a little bit of a idea of how I kind of got in there, really.
That's amazing that like Jason gave you that right off the bat. Like, that's amazing. Like, you didn't even know that, I guess, was going to be named after you. And now, you know, like most of the arc.
I know. I had no idea. And there was this moment when we were in the Indian restaurant where Ted and Trent's in the Indian restaurant. And he says to me, it ain't about the winning and losing. It's about these boys being the best versions of themselves, both on and off the pitch. And that ain't always easy, especially if you know, got a kind of tough childhood. And I think because I'd sort of done this, well, it was because I'd done this backstory, I looked at him like, it's sort of like pop, like this guy is saying what this guy has always wanted his dad to hear, to say. And so suddenly this, what was, you know, at first perceived as a bit of a clown character from Trent's point of view, a joke that I was going to completely, you know, that Trent was going to take down and in his review of him, suddenly he says the very thing that he kind of always wanted his dad to say. So it just completely unraveled Trent, you know, and actually his journey really starts from there.
You know, it's interesting too, because so many people, when we're talking to the fans and to the community, we ask, when was it that this show hooked you? And almost to a person, they say, season 1, episode 3, Trent Crim, The Independent.
Yep.
You know, and because really? It's, I think it's because you in that episode, Trent in that episode, kind of embodies us as an audience to say, well, this guy's kind of hokey, you know, like, what is this story? Fish out of water. But it becomes so real in that restaurant, you know, like there's something that goes beyond just the standard tropes that this show, they do such a good job when they write it to avoid those kind of tropes as well. And so just, you know, just not necessarily a question there, just it's remarkable. It's great that you became such a fan favorite too, and that we now get to see you so much in season 3. You know, I think people are so happy that Trent has such a larger storyline in season 3. And I know you shared with Vulture this story about a conversation that you had with Jason and sort of how that evolved. But I wonder if maybe you could share some insights into that with our audience.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, just to go to your first point, it's true that Trent is kind of, in a way, he's a bit like, right from the beginning, he's a bit like an audience member in the show. Mm. You know, he's slightly heightened, but he's skeptical. I mean, certainly in the UK, at that time in season 1, the idea of an American football coach managing an English football team was as laughable as seeing Donald Trump come down the escalator, going to be your president.
Thanks for the reminder.
He went back up though, didn't he? He went back up at some point. Wherever he is now, bless him, bless the Donald. But it was almost like an alarming image, this idea of Ted Lasso managing an English football team. But it's interesting, isn't it, how over the 3 seasons, and, you know, obviously we've gone through a pandemic and everything that's happened, that actually, I mean, particularly when you look at, you know, with Ryan Reynolds, with Wrexham and what's happening over here, you know, it's like the whole playing field, excuse the pun, but it's opened right out and it's become less, do you know what, I'm going to quote the show, it has become less judgmental. Mm-hmm. And it's become more curious. And oddly, Trent kind of embodies that. And particularly now in the locker room in season 3, where he's still, in a way, an audience member there, because he's not part of the team. He's not, you know, and I mean, not really. And so it's an interesting place for my character to be. Yeah.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
and, well, it's interesting.
I know some audience members there are going to quibble if they're saying you're not part of the team. Many people think Trent Crim is legit part of the team. He's a diamond dog now.
When Trent Crim became a diamond dog, we like it was like in our notes as we like,
cheered.
Oh my! And then you know the giddiness that you have in the scene in the locker room where you're like, oh, it's been 3 seasons, the lasso way, everything about that is like, that's us as an audience. And it's actually interesting because I have this theory that the writers are kind of trying to add some meta-ness to this particular season. And the fact that you said like, oh, number 4 doesn't matter. Number 4 isn't important. And I almost like, I made the connection that like,
wow,
are you talking about season 4? Maybe that doesn't matter, you know?
Well, let me tell you right now, I didn't see that. I didn't clock that, but I would not be surprised, because the level of forensic genius and detail that Jason and the writers put into this, that would not surprise me if that's an in joke that they're like, doesn't even matter what number 4 is. I hadn't even clocked that. I love that. I love that. I think that's amazing. I thanks for saying that. It was a little bit of a risk, that scene, but I wanted to go kind of on 11, Because I wanted to show the kind of like the little boy, you know, the one that had never been picked for the team, the one that wasn't like this kind of like, you know, well, basically a team member or an athletic anyway. But Trent Crim does know the game and he does know a bit of magic when he sees it. And he does believe in Ted Lasso. And so he can't help himself at that point. That like he's just spilling out. And I'm so happy that there was such a lovely reaction to that, because in a way that was sort of a bit of a stretch from the Trent that, you know, in a continuity kind of way that we've been kind of used to, particularly in the first few seasons. But
there's a reason you're an Emmy nominee. It was so much fun to see on screen. But Jeremy, I think you had a follow-up too.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, we've obviously season three has hit so many emotional beats for all of the fans. And definitely one of those big emotional beats everybody's been tracking is Trent and Colin's story together in season three, hitting on so many different things there. But with Trent, like mentoring Colin through his own difficulties around coming out and stuff, like, could you talk to us a little bit just about working with Billy Harris in some of the scenes, because he is having an amazing season as well. Just really, really amazing stuff. But like, just how's it been working with him in this particular storyline?
I got to tell you, it's been awful. He's an asshole. Yeah.
That's what we're looking for.
I cannot say I can't speak high enough about that young man. So, you know, when you're playing a character that has got such a kind of that has those intimate scenes with somebody else, there's this really interesting thing that kind of happens. There's the two actors and then there's the two characters, and you kind of develop these two relationships side by side, and and there's always a crossover in some kind of a way. There's a resonance that rolls between the two, and they're both really complementary. And we you know, I guess our kind of baptism of fire was that scene, our storyline in Amsterdam. We shot all of our stuff in one night, from about kind of like maybe 6 PM till I think we finished about 5 AM, 4:30, 5 AM, something like that. So it was a proper night shoot. I love a night shoot. There's a bit of kind of magic that happens. Everyone's a bit exhausted and a bit kind of, there's a bit of excitement, you know. It goes back to that 10-year-old when I first stepped on set. And also when you're away as well, that's quite exciting. We were in Amsterdam. And we shot it kind of a little bit back to front. It was a little bit out of order, but the last scene was the scene on the Humber Monument where Billy had that amazing speech, of which was rewritten really heavily beforehand, as is often the way on this show. And Jason kind of arrived just before we did the scene. It was great. I remember we jumped and got in this van, and Jason was like, "Hey, how you doing? Come in." And we sort of like got in the van with him, and he was like, "Okay, here's the sides." And then Billy's like, I could see Billy going, "Oh my God," because there was just a lot of new stuff, or it'd been, you know, just sort of subtly shifted a bit. And basically, in a way, possibly your worst nightmare as an actor, because you're thinking, "Oh God, I'm going to get all the lines all muddled up." But by this point, I think we're all quite used to how this show rolls. And there's a sort of a trust and a belief that we'll always get it. And that kind of just fast tracks you, and you know that you're going to get it. And Billy did. And he just, he learned that speech. And then we did maybe about 3 takes of it. And it was so beautiful to be there as Trent with him in that scene. And as you know, I don't say verbally very much, but being able to really listen to what's on that character's mind, and knowing that pretty much all of those situations are situations that Trent is a seasoned sort of veteran of, but he's dealt with it in a different way, and obviously he's not a top athlete. It was just a kind of a privilege to embody that moment, you know. And both of us have done a fair bit of research, and both of us are well aware that there are a lot of closeted athletes, and not just athletes, you know, people that feel that it might jeopardize their job or their standing, social standing, if they come out. And so you do feel a real kind of, I don't know, it's just an honor. You just get this sort of sense of like, this is a bit of sacred material that you just want to, you know, play right. And Billy's just I think he's going to have a huge career, and he's now a dear friend. We often meet up in town and in London and have dumplings. We go for dumplings together. It was a delight, really.
Yeah, it was so good to also see you guys getting to party a little bit after that scene as well.
I love that too.
Yeah,
we shot that before that scene, and I knew. I said I wanted Trent to be ripping it up at that point. You know, yeah.
Well, and we have other questions that aren't necessarily lasso related, but I feel like we're on such a roll talking about lasso now. And, you know, I just have to say that in researching what we wanted to ask you, I did see an interview you just did with pride.com, and you talked about all the research that went into this scene and this particular storyline. And I think it just really shows, as an audience member, the type of care that both you and Billy put into this storyline. And I think that that's why it resonates so well. And also someone like Cola, who, you know, his reactions to Colin and becoming aware of that. It's just, I those are the types of things that I truly think will transcend a TV show and really go and maybe help someone. And so, you know, that's something that hopefully you're able to take with you as well as we start to move on from the show.
Yeah. And I just like to say about that, you know, that there's a kind of a B side. There's a sadness to this amazing reaction we've had to this scene. You know, the reason this storyline has had, I think, such a wonderful reaction is because of the sad reality that is actually out there. You know, and that it takes, you know, it takes a bit of art and stuff to highlight and express this kind of level of trauma, because that is what it is. And, you know, the idea of not being able to kiss your fella at the end of the match because for fear of being, you know, vilified or even, you know, ousted or, you know, demonized, whatever. That's a sad reality, right? And in preparation for the season, that I found there was loads and loads of books about this kind of subject. And there's one amazing book called Straightjacket by a guy called Matthew Todd, who used to be the editor of Attitude magazine over here. And it's a whole thesis of what it's like to be gay in a heteronormative world and the pressures that are put upon you. And there's all these case studies in it that just broke my heart, you know, like things like I remember one guy said, you know, I never came out to my parents because I didn't want to be homeless.
Oh, geez.
And it's like, oh shit, this is real, you know? Yeah. So that's the texture of what's in the material. And we don't have to do anything, but it's an invitation to sort of become part of a potentially a kind of a healing wave, you know. And I think that's what everything needs to be, if possible.
Yeah, you know, and it just comes through so well in that storyline, and you know, as someone that is coming at this from a straight white perspective, it allows this show so much, allows for that empathy to come through. It's such a core philosophy of this show. But we did ask some of our listeners when we knew we had the opportunity to be able to speak with you. And there's a few questions that just kept coming up with what you want to ask. And one of them, yeah, absolutely. You could probably guess one of them. them that we're saving towards the end. But costume design kept coming up. And particularly your shirts that you're wearing. I know like Ashlyn was very happy to see your shirt. And also my friend, he texted me immediately and he's like, you need to listen to Midlake because clearly Trent Krem loves Midlake, you know? So we're wondering when Jackie and you are working on those, how much input did you have into the costume design for Trent Krem?
Well, I had an amazing collaboration with Jackie, and it's all testament to Jackie. And I know that if you, any other cast member will say the same. She is really open to what you have, what you come at it with as an actor. You know, she's not somebody that says you're going to wear this and deal with it. She's like, what do you think? You know, so it's just a conversation, and we would start, you know, chatting and talking about little ideas and stuff. And all I can say to you is that it was just literally running that, like, it was like running down a long hallway and ringing a bell every single time between us. We were like, how about this? Ding, yes. How about this? Ding, yes. And so like for me, when it got to, I'd love to chat with you about the Midlake t-shirt and as well, because there is a, I don't think this is a spoiler because we're far enough into the show. There is 100% a story arc for Trent Krim's t-shirts. You know, and I'm really excited about the final t-shirt.
Awesome.
Just gonna
say.
Like, great. I think it's killer. And it says everything. But last week when Trent's wearing Dolly, you know, I was thrilled about that as well. I was just thrilled to get that through because, you know, this is a man that would never in a million years wear a Dolly Parton t-shirt in season one or season two for fear of everything that we've already, you know, covered.
Yeah.
And so what you're seeing is a man, a person becoming more comfortable with who they are, knowing that they can, express themselves even in a you know little way there. That's why like the mug for instance was also was a choice. I remember one day I had it when I first had it and Jason went, you chose that right? And I was like, mm-hmm. And he went, mm-hmm. It was great. And I was really thrilled about that as well. So these little things coming through. So yeah, it was just a brilliant conversation that I had with Jackie where we just had loads and loads and loads of fun and always just trying to keep it, you know, appropriate, like in the background, not too far up front, but just you know, psychologically appropriate. Yeah. And I think so far we've done that.
Yeah. Oh, his shirt game is getting a life of its own on social media right now. So just know
love
that
it.
Trent's shirts. Somebody needs to start the Twitter account or something. So
I love it.
Yeah. I want to throw you a little bit of a curveball here, a non-Lasso question, because one of my favorite things about this line of work is like, I really get to dive into a person's performance history and you get to like see things like you saw these people in, but you maybe kind of forgot about. Actually here at our network, we're about to start and launch a new show all about the series Black Mirror. And I know that you were on an episode of Black Mirror. We asked Cola about this as well when he was on that show too. And you were specifically on the Waldo moment episode, which,
yeah,
my God, is becoming more and more prescient every single day, isn't it? So
yes.
I just wanted to ask, like, do you have any like memories of shooting that that episode? And like, it, as you reflect on it, it seems less and less far-fetched every day, doesn't it?
I mean, yeah, it's amazing how the crossover between art and real life these days, isn't it? I mean, you know, with that role in Black Mirror, I haven't mentioned this to anyone, but only because no one's asked me, is I certainly based the cadence and my delivery on Charlie Brooker.
Yeah, okay. I can see that.
So yeah, there's a sort of a Brooker-esque element to the way that I delivered that. And I was just thrilled, you know, because I think he's amazing. I mean, you may know this already, but Charlie Brooker originally over here was like a TV critic. Although maybe he wrote something before he started to critique TV. Because he did Nathan Barley. I don't know if you know Nathan Barley, but Nathan Barley is a piece of comic genius here.
Writing
well, I please do. And Nathan Barley, co-created, as far as I know, by Charlie Brooker and Chris Morris, is an absolute masterpiece. And that would have been in the 90s. And that kind of tracks the hipster movement that happened over here. And it was so far-fetched when it came out that actually, if you look at it now, it's not far-fetched at all. They were like, you know, big guys like wearing, you know, driving, riding around in London on like mini BMXs, you know, like little, which now you see all the time.
Yeah.
And with their trousers right down the, you know, by their ankle and all that. Anyway, but one of the things I think is amazing about Charlie Brooker is that he used to be this phenomenal, I mean, very erudite TV critic, but he's one that really puts his money where his mouth is because you critique stuff. And then he, you know, then he started making stuff, and the stuff he makes, I mean, it's knockout. It's up there with the best. So, you know, to be involved in Black Mirror was very cool.
Yeah, I've told everybody, you know, first watch Ted Lasso, best show on TV. Second show, if you're going to watch one, is watch Black Mirror, because I failed to find a bad episode of that series anywhere.
So imaginative, isn't it? It really goes there. Yeah.
Yep. And yeah, so many absolutely. Of your favorite actors got, you know, early starts on that show, especially cool. all the British actors.
Great.
And I've got another question that I've been asking all of your castmates. I think so much of this show, the spotlight on mental health is so important. And a lot of us came to this show during the pandemic when we needed it. And so I'll give you my story. My listeners are like, I can't believe you keep telling this story. But I started running during the pandemic, and I started watching Ted Lasso. And I started, you know, I also had some podcasts that I would listen to. But I've actually lost 70 pounds, and now I've completed a marathon through running because of getting through that. But I'm just wondering, from your aspect, is there something that you do for your own mental health that you might suggest others try out there? Or what is it that you do to kind of cope with some of these stresses too?
That's actually a lovely question. first of all, congratulations. I mean, a marathon, that's something. That's amazing. My wife ran a marathon, and I saw her along the way. And every time I saw her when she ran past, I just burst into tears. I was, because it was so amazing to see. Well, I realize this is a massive part of my life these days, is that I meditate daily, and I probably started I think when I was around 30, so nearly 20 years of almost daily meditation. And I really love that, and actually, much like my, you know, the job of acting, it just gets more and more interesting. And in a way now, I just, you know, not all the time, but it's almost like life itself is a meditation. So it's that's one way that I know that if I'm feeling a bit shaky or a bit wobbly, that the best thing I can do is just shut the F up and meditate. I also am a big fan of a long soak in a bath. A long soak in a bath, ideally with some bath salts. That's a winner. And then I'm also a runner. I also run.
That's great. The Keely Jones method, right? A really long soak in the bath, right?
So, that's it.
That's fantastic. And, you know, again, thank you for you, the writers, the cast members that you have that are able to put such a spotlight on mental health, because that's another area where this show transcends just being a TV show and will help people, because it has. I mean, it's helped me, you know, and so I know that helping a lot of people out there for sure.
Yeah, definitely identify with you too about the emotion you felt like watching your wife, because I wasn't getting to watch Craig, but he ran the Disney Marathon in Walt Disney World in Florida, and me and my family were down there at the same time. So we just kept tracking him on the app, and every time I kept seeing him get further and further along, I was like, holy crap, he's doing it.
Impressive.
Yeah, buried the lead there too, Craig. You finished in like 4.5 hours, a whole marathon. Like, that's pretty nuts.
Yeah, I was I was okay with my time for sure. I rode a roller coaster in the middle of it.
Yeah, you rode a roller coaster too in the middle.
Because I'm doing it in Disney World. So my favorite roller coaster, I was able to jump on that and run it and ride it.
Are you serious? You rode a roller coaster in the middle of a marathon?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, it was fun.
You're well, not. I guess when in Disneyland, why not? Right.
Yeah, exactly.
Run a Disney marathon, get on it, right? Diving back into Trent here a little bit, we had a great fan question about this that gets you back into your character a little bit here, but they want to know if Trent Crim himself could interview anyone in history, who would he want to have a chat with?
Wow.
Right?
Gee, that's good. Oof. Oh man, that's a really good question.
We have smart listeners.
That sideswiped me. I wasn't ready for that. Do me a favor. Let me percolate on that. Let me just let that one sit on the back, and we'll come back to it. Gonna let that one hang for a second.
All right, we'll go to more emotional things, those will be a lot easier, right?
No, I love it. I like that question so much. I don't want to kick it out of the way. I want to think about that one for a second.
Sure. We'll come back at the end there. We'll let Craig get
sure. Them.
Yeah. And so I just want to ask that, you know, we are currently 2 episodes away from the end of season 3 and perhaps ultimately the end of the series, who knows? I'm wondering if you can take us behind the scenes a bit, and when this show is wrapped, is there a particular scene or memory or interaction you had with your castmates that you'll carry with you moving forward?
Do you mean the interaction that happened on set, or
absolutely. Yeah. Any interaction that you might have had on set that you're just going to remember, moving forward. And it can be during a scene, you would like to mention, but just a memory that you'll have.
Yeah. I think the one that comes most to mind, and this is a real peek behind the scenes, is that the final day, the final scene, when that wrapped, we were all in the locker room at AFC Richmond. I'm just checking, I'm not giving you like a crazy spoiler. It's cool. Because I will literally get, you'll see me just vanish off the screen.
Jason's actually sending right off screen, right?
Yeah, no, I don't think I'm giving anything away. Jason gave a speech to this room of, you know, we're talking, I mean, everyone was in there, from like, you know, producers to the sound, every department, we all crammed in. And so the set was jam packed with all of the various departments who played such a big part of the show. And Brendan and Joe Kelly and Jason stood up in the middle, and they did a raffle, which was really good fun. They announced this raffle, and that was cool how that played out. But then after that, Jason did a little speech, and it was so moving. I was in tears. Pretty much every single person in the room was in tears. And basically what he said in that speech was, you know, this has been a piece of magic, and let's take it out there, and let's take it to our families at home. Let's take it to our next jobs. Yeah. Let's take it into our work, into whatever we're going to create. Let's take it into our interactions with people, because this is a piece of magic, and let's see how far it can go. And I thought that was it was such a Ted Lasso moment, obviously. Yeah. But it was very real. It was very heartfelt, and it was true, actually, because what was kind of, you know, resonating in that room is that most people's lives have changed. I mean, I can tell you from my point of view. You know, I've got my little boy was I think he was maybe 1 or just 1 year old when we first started. He's now just turned 5, so that would be about right. And you know, to have this amazing job, continue to just be able to pay my mortgage, and feed myself with my family, it's just been amazing on that level. And doing something that I really believe in, and it's helped kind of, you know, elevate my career, all those things. So that's remarkable. And I would say that everybody, pretty much, I mean, I can't speak for everyone, but most people that I can think of in that room, they had their own version of that as well. So it was a real special occasion, this job, and certainly in my career, you know, a one-off.
You know, you mentioned it there, you know, about kind of moving forward from the show. You are now an Emmy nominee. You are a fan favorite from this entire fan base. And I think we can safely say someone who seriously has such a talent for bringing a character to life. You really, really do. So what's next for you, James Lance? Like, what are you hoping to accomplish here after Ted Lasso is in the rear view?
Well, I really... you know, I said this a little bit before, but I genuinely do believe in the power of comedy. You know, I love it. I love it probably more than any other sort of art form. I mean, on a personal level, I love going to gigs and music. But in terms of what I can sort of put out there, it would be it would be to do with comedy, I think. And I would like to continue to put something out that's really, you know, quite special, and that actually kind of, you know, I don't want this to sound too grandiose, but genuinely, like, if I could create a comedy that or be a part of a comedy that continues to have a kind of a healing effect, I'm more than happy. That would be my dream. But also I'm not sort of just in that realm. I love drama. I love theater. You know, I really want to get back on the boards. It's been a few years now. I'd love to get my teeth into another, you know, real juicy stage character, and just keep working. You know, I love the life of an actor. I quite like perversely not knowing what I'm going to do next. And I just hope that it's something worthwhile.
It will be. It will be. We know that.
Thanks, man.
Well, as we come to start to wrap things up, we've got to come back to you for our interview
question. Yes.
Have you thought about who it might be?
Okay. So,
I want you to answer it first. And then I think I came up with an answer potentially too.
Oh.
Well, do you know what? I tell you what, right? Okay, I tell you, so it's anyone in history, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going straight to the Son of God.
Yes!
I'm going to get Big J.
He's on the record. Big J on the record.
Big J on record, right? Surely that would be the interview, wouldn't it? Is there anyone else?
That'd do some ratings, yeah.
Absolutely, yeah, and the investigative journalism he'd bring to that'd be fascinating.
I think so.
Fascinating conversation.
So. And I think we'll do it by a body of water, mm-hmm. And let's just see if that cat can actually walk on water, and if not, why not? And if not, how did that rumor come about? But you know, I'm personally not a religious man, but I do believe in a power of love, and I believe in, I believe in something that's very, very beautiful. And I do think that Jesus had something very special. He must have done, right? I mean, he just must have done, whoever this guy was. So it'd be kind of interesting to have a chat with him.
Yeah. Now this might be a little bit on the nose for your season 3 storyline, but I could see Trent really wanting to dive into someone like Harvey Milk and kind of the movement that he was able to inspire.
Yeah.
And of course his life being cut short there, you know, that I think that could be a really fascinating chat as well.
Yeah, absolutely. That would be amazing. And then also you're making me think of Quentin Crisp as well. That would have been a pretty cool mm-hmm. conversation, just as a kind of an Englishman in America and stuff. But Harvey Milk would be great. Yeah.
So Jeremy, you have one last question and then I get to do our normal last question.
Yeah, so this is obligatory. I apologize if you've been asked this about a
literally
million
have gotten
and a half
dozens of these.
This was by far the biggest question we kept getting over and over again. So as a nod to our fans, we have to say it just because of it. Tell us about the hair care routine, because Trent's hair is also taken on a life of its own.
So what that's like a really, that's been a big question about how does.
Dozens
of questions. How does he keep his hair? When did the white streak come in? Like all of this kind of stuff.
I love it. Well, the white, so all of the white streak and the gray, that's all natural. There's nothing that's been kind of played with there. And funnily enough, years ago, I was playing a villainous character in something. This is when I was in my 20s. And I remember I said to the makeup department, do you think I could just get like a white streak just sort of right at the front? Like, you know, I just think it would be great. And they were like, no. You're not going to do that. That's not going to happen. And then, so, you know, and then before somehow I must have, I don't know if I willed it on, but yeah, I mean, and then it came and then it's like I mean, years later. So there it is. I mean, and it's kind of landed in quite a cool place, which is good, I guess. The only thing that's weird about, you know, starting to go gray, when it first happens, it's really exciting. You think this is cool, but then you realize it's never coming back.
Right.
That's only going one way, and it's all going to go like that eventually. But you know, we're all bald underneath our hair, aren't we? So it's, you know, we're all the same. I just felt that Trent Crim would—he's just got long, sort of pompous. As a word I've used before, but he's got to be. There's a sort of. You know, a slightly ridiculous flamboyance to the Barnet, and I just thought, yeah, let's roll with that.
That's great.
And I'm going to throw Craig one last curveball here because I'm getting to talk to you, I have to call out one specific moment in the series that
please do.
It's very minor sometimes when people think about it, but it was what made me know that, like, I'm going to follow your career for forever because you're so good at this. But it's in episode 3 of season 2 when Sam is giving his press conference after the Dubai Air thing, and he crosses it out, and you're asking the question to him about, you know, like, oh, you know, do you think it affected the team? And he tells you back, you know, oh, I'm not here to talk about the game. And the look on your face that you give him, because it's like Trent is almost giving him like this, like a, attaboy, Sam. Like, you know, like,
yeah,
this he really wanted to ask, but he felt like he had to ask a football question. That was so damn good, man.
I love that. Well, you know what you were picking up on there was that me as Trent, I guess, was very invested in Sam and what he's was he gonna say what he needed to say? Was it gonna happen? You know, because I think first and foremost, for some reason, I think Trent Crim is very much a genuine investigative journalist. You know, he went into sport and I think he's really good at it. But there's more underneath there. And so suddenly the storyline was just getting a bit more kind of spicy for Trent. And I really wanted to do more with that, you know.
Yeah.
So that's cool. I love that you picked up on that because I felt that. So the fact that I felt that, you got it. That's really cool.
Oh, it's great, man. And after he gives his answer, you give him like this little nod. And it literally was just kind of like, good boy, man. You know, like you did good there. It was, oh,
you
man,
rocked it.
So good.
Yeah. I love that. So interesting what people pick up on, you know. One thing I will just share this, and I really believe this to be true, and I wish I'd known this as a younger actor. I don't think there's a frame that's wasted on screen. If your character's on screen, there's the stuff that people will pick up on, the way that you can tell a story, you've got every opportunity. You don't need a line. You don't need words. It's all moments, actually. And so what you talked about is that little moment that no one else has mentioned to me. I hadn't even remembered that moment, but actually I remember it now you bring it up. So it's storytelling, and I love that.
It's lived in my head ever since. It's just like, it's one of my favorite moments from that entire season. So
I'm so happy. That's cool.
So we have this traditional last question that we do, and that is to kind of turn things over to you a little bit. We know that you've done dozens of these types of interviews for print and podcasts and video, and we are just wondering if there is a story or a message or something that you always want to talk about that you're never asked about. So kind of giving you an open platform to finish us off here.
Wow. Wow, that's interesting. So just like a little moment or a little
whatever you want it to be.
Cool. Two things come up. Let me think about it for a second. I think I'm gonna go with that one. A few years ago I was very lucky to become a dad. I don't know. Are you guys?
Dads? Yes, yeah. I got two.
Nice. Okay, cool. And lovely. That's so cute. Nice.
All I've got is my wallet, man.
My wife's showing up on the wallet as well. Okay. And when my little boy arrived, he came along, and the love that I felt when I first saw this little person is just indescribable. And my wife and I know it's the same for her, and it's sort of an interesting thing when you become parents, because you fall in love with the new person that arrives, but also you see your partner fall in love with someone else as well. That whole experience has been the most life-changing thing that I've ever experienced. All I've got to say about that is I had no idea that that was going to affect me the way that it did. And my wife and I used to say, it's like an angel had moved into our home. You know, we were like, it's like, what is this little being, you know? And sometimes I actually think, you know, it kind of really, really is like an angel that moves in, because when they're that little, I think they're pretty close to some source or wherever it is they've come from that is so special. And I actually think we're all going to end up back there as well. I think it's just a little doorway. And if I don't know why this came to mind, but I think, you know, children are the most beautiful, beings, and how lucky we are to as parents to look after them. You know what I mean? Yeah. But not just if you're a parent, if you meet them, you know, when you meet little people I don't get to say that very much. And that's something that I feel in my heart. Yeah.
If I remember correctly, when we talked to Nick, he mentioned something very similar about his mm-hmm. wife and her kind of parenting as well. But fatherhood is such a huge part of this show. And I also want to mention to you that, you know, this is a show that I came to love during the pandemic. It helped me mentally get through a period of time that I needed it to. And then, you know, this past year has been really rocky for me personally. I was informed of a divorce late last year. And so to watch this show again and see this show that I love and be able to rewatch and then to watch it and see that it also means something completely new and completely different that I needed at that time. You know, I don't know that we'll ever get the opportunity to talk to Jason or to talk to Bill, but just thank you from my perspective, I think I speak for a lot of fans, that the art and creativity that you all have put into the world is something that impacts a lot of us. And I know that I hope that resonates with the cast and with Jason and with Bill and with these writers. And just thank you for everything that you've done.
Oh man, thank you. I mean, thanks for thanking me, and there's no need to thank me personally, but thanks for saying it. And yeah, I think, you know, what Jason Sudeikis has done there is pretty extraordinary. I can't think of another comedy personally that seems to, you know, use the emotional material that we all go through, whether it be divorce or, all the themes that are in the show. And it's kind of courageous, this show, for that. And I guess that's why it resonates so much, you know, and in my own life as well. So I'm just lucky guy to be in it.
As are we, sir.
Yeah, we're lucky that you're in it too. So thank you so much for your time today, and I hope you have a good rest of your evening.
Thanks. I love chatting with you. Thank you so much. See you later, dads.
See ya.
Bye.
Oh, I loved his message about fatherhood, and particularly because this show embodies so much of that fatherhood. And so it's so important to the themes that we talked about, not only in season two, but that's kind of covering and carrying over to season three as well. But any thoughts about the interview that we were just able to have, Jer?
No, I mean, I love that he took some time, you know, to do the whole, you know, thinking about the Who Would Trey Krim interview. And I loved his answer. Yeah, why wouldn't you just go straight to the source, man? So that's pretty good. But yeah, like, again, just the fatherhood aspect of it. And then, you know, getting to see like how much calling out specific moments of Trent Krim like mean to him, you know. And it's just like, and I think I'm not alone in just like these little moments that this character gets to have on the screen. It's just amazing, and it's just fantastic stuff.
Absolutely. It's great because he became such a fan favorite, and then it morphed into him having this larger storyline and really becoming one of our mains for season three and guiding Colin through this incredible storyline that we all are really enjoying seeing. And hopefully in the next two episodes, we get to see Colin kiss his fella after one of the matches for sure. But it's just been a great treat to be able to talk to James today. And if Case, he's listening back, thank you so much for your time and for your talent and for your art. And we can't wait to see what he gets to do into the future as well. And not much I can say beyond that, just that it was such a great experience to get to talk to him today. And he was so warm when we jumped on the interview and when we're off the interview as well. It just, man, talk about somebody that embodies the Lasso way, right?
Yeah, he definitely does. And again, we just love that we get to share this with you, because look, you guys make this possible, you know, that we get to talk to these people that help create the show that we all love so much. So we hope you're enjoying getting a little bit of these behind the scenes insights. Love the stories he told about Jason and the working process that they have and stuff. Just an incredible experience there and talk. And two more episodes, guys. We're gonna be all right. We're gonna get through it, as always, together.
Yeah, and speaking of being together, we do have this growing Facebook community. So go and check out Peanut Butter and Biscuits. Also follow us, PBBFRN on Twitter, and also Peanut Butter Biscuit Time on Instagram as well. So we'll be posting all these episodes continuing forward. We got to start talking about like our end game here, buddy, and figuring out what we're doing after the last couple of episodes are done. But you do know that we will be back Wednesday with episode 11's recap. And I got to say, the little brief description, I believe it's called something about Mom City. So I'm wondering if this is your Man City game you've been waiting for.
I mean, I don't know. It'd be an interesting jump there, wouldn't it, to like do that in the penultimate episode. But it also does kind of, you know, portend a little bit when it comes to, there's a lot of great series that do that. You know, Breaking Bad always had amazing penultimate episodes. So I don't know. Maybe it will be there. Yeah, I just can't wait. I just can't wait to see it.
Yep, and we'll be right there with you. So thank you so much for listening today. Thank you again to James. Thank you for everybody that was able to make that possible for us. But for Peanut Butter and Biscuits, I am Craig.
And I'm Jeremy.
And as always, be a goldfish.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Front Row Network, a proud Community Voices member of National Public Radio Illinois. For more from the Front Row Network, including our articles or our other dozens of shows, visit thefrontrownetwork.com or nprillinois.org/programs/frontrownetwork. You can also find us on social media by searching for the Front Row Network on Facebook, YouTube, and Instagram, and on Twitter @FrontRowReviews with a Z.